As we continue on with a segment with our big guest of the day, has become very popular, story time, where we talk about the story of many players on how they got, you know, to the peak of their careers in a variety of different sports. And today we are joined by Edmonton native. It was a fifth-round selection of the Tampa Bay Lightning back in the 1992 NHL entry draft, paid for the Lightning, Flyers, Sharks, Preds, Capitals, and Boston Bruins. In a career that started in 1993 and ended in 2006, at least in North America, and then went over and played 1 year in the EIHL in England. Brant Myers joins us. Brant, welcome back to the program. And everybody always has a unique story, so I guess let's start out when you were young. Was Brant Myers a rink rat from a young age?
Hey, boys. Good to hear from you again. Oh, yeah, I think literally from – there's actually a picture I have of when I was – I think it was my first birthday, and Gary Howitt from the Islanders took an Islander puck and put it on my chest, and they took a picture. So I think I was sort of destined to pick up a stick and put the skates on at a pretty young age.
What did you like about him, Izzy, when you got into it?
About hockey itself?
Yeah, about hockey, yeah. Hockey, yeah.
You know, what? Honestly, to be, you know, really honest, is that my childhood wasn't the best childhood. I had quite a bit of turmoil going on within the home, within my mother and my stepfather. And so for me to escape, just to get out on the outdoor rink or go play road hockey with my friends, there's, you know, pretty much that was my natural habitat. And it just gave me a more of an escape thing, but over time, obviously, I, you know, there was nothing more that I wanted to do.
You know, Brandon, it's interesting. We had George Larrack on the program last week, and he talked about, you know, a similar thing. His dad was quite abusive for him, and you know, hockey was his outlet. Was that a similar situation for you?
Yeah, it was. I, you know, the physical abuse started when I was about 5 years old, and then fortunately, around the age of 7 or 8. My grandparents saw what was going on within the home, and they said that'll never happen again. And I moved in with my grandparents back in Grand Center. And from that point on, you know, it was a safe household, and, you know, none of that stuff ever happened again.
Brant Myers joins us, a longtime NHLer, talking about his career. So, you know, you're growing up here and you're playing. You know, what was your experience like playing? Were you forward, a D? Were you, you know, bigger guy? Did you have lots of room? Like, how did all that come together?
Well, in Pee Wee, I was a healthy scratch.
That's a pretty early start to healthy scratch pattern. I'm very familiar with those, too.
I had the suit on in Pee Wee. I was sitting in the stands. No, I'm just kidding. But no, quite honestly, like it was great. I was a forward. I was a winger. I was a centerman. I played all the time, and everything was hunky dory, pretty much until I went to my first Western Hockey League camp at 15.
And what happened there? Because where was your first camp? Was it in Portland?
Yeah, it was with the Winterhawks, and that was actually the camp where I think I mentioned on the show before my first fight ever was against a backup goalie.
And whoa! The backup goalie? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, so we were playing. we had tryouts, and I was listed by the team. And every time I skated by the opponent's bench, their backup goalie was just screaming at me, and I had white gloves on, and I had my shirt tucked in, and. Anyways, thought I was Gretzky. And so the, you know, everybody is in the stands, my dad, the coach, the, you know, the GM. And he just said to me, the game ended and we were done. And he said, you want to go? And I said, sure. So the next thing you know, he takes his blocker and his glove and he leaves it on the bench. And I am squaring off at center ice with this goalie. And that was the first time I realized that I was a left-hander. And so anyways, we end up scrapping, and I bloodied him up pretty good. I was pretty happy about the whole situation. As I skate off the ice going into the dressing room, there was maybe 5-6 people that were there, and I thought they were going to say, hey, you know, good fight. And this guy walks up to me and punches me right in the face, and I go down. I got my gear on still, obviously, and everybody's in there, blah, blah, blah. I don't know what's going on, and I found out that it was the backup goalie's brother, and he was pissed off that I laid a licking on his brother, so he decided to try and lay a licking on me, and that was my introduction to the Western Hockey League.
Oh, my God.
Like, now, that was an exhibition game.
What was the goalie's problem? Like, I've never heard of a – like, I've heard of goalies chirping in back, but I never, like, calling a guy out on the other team.
So I was playing pretty well. I remember I had, like, 3 goals in the scrimmage and, yeah. You know, dangling. And what he said was he calling me an effing hot dog every time I skated by the bench. And I'm like, who is this guy? And finally, I just said, you know, what's your problem? And then, you know, the famous words, you want to go. And I just thought, sure. And that's how that happened.
Oh, my God.
Brant Myers joined us in story time. And, Brant, you know what? I think a lot of people, like, everybody kind of has misconceptions at times about fighters. Because up until the WHL, like your last year in Bonnyville, you had 102 points, 40 goals in 60 games. Like, yeah, you were physical, but you also scored, right? And then you get to the Western League, and, you know, you mentioned that was kind of your first introduction. You do well. Did people pigeonhole you right away to be a fighter in junior?
So I think what screwed me was the fight against the goalie, and then – I fought another young kid that was 16 the next year. His name was Josh Erdman. And we ended up fighting 3 times in the same game in camp. And our owner came running down and he grabbed us and he said, listen, both of you guys stop it. You guys are going to both be playing together this year. And so we made the team as 16-year-olds. But those 4 fights that I had, I did really well in them. And I think they're like, oh, okay, here he is. He's 6'4", 200 pounds, and he's a left-hander. And yeah. So literally I went from scoring 100-and-some points in midget the year before to scoring 2 goals the next year in junior.
How was that mentally for you?
It was tough, but you know what, Struddy? I think that the atmosphere that I was in, you know, my dad always dreamed of me making it to the Western Hockey League, and I go from playing in front of maybe 150 fans in midget, you know, to 9,000-10,000 opening night in Portland. Right. And it was just like, wow, it almost felt like the NHL in a way. So, and I knew I was that much closer to my goal. So for me, I never really thought too much about it. Okay, if this is my role, then how do I perfect it?
Brant Myers joined us, longtime NHLer and a professional hockey player. Myers, you know, it's interesting because that's a pretty sharp U-turn, you know, like to go from a guy that produced a lot of points to now becoming a fighter. Did you feel that you had the skills necessary at that time, because I played against you when you were older in the Western League, and I saw the player that I knew. But at that time, mm-hmm. did you feel you could have been more? Not that it's, you know, been more than that?
Well, yeah. So, for instance, 16, I have 7 points all year, but I lead the league as a 16-year-old in majors. And then when I finally got a chance to play, and they put me on the first line in Lethbridge with Dominic Pittis and a Russian, you know, I ended up having, I think it was 62 points in 60 games. Mm-hmm. Like, I was on the first line power play, and they gave me a chance to play. And then when I went to play for Tampa's farm team the next year, I reverted right back to a 16-year-old, that role again. And so I had to start all over again. And I never really, you know, once you're in the NHL and you're getting paid to be a heavyweight, well, that's what you're getting paid to do. So you're not thinking about stick handling or trying to, you know, take the puck wide. It's dump and try and kill somebody.
Brant Myers joins. Brant, you mentioned you kind of started to hone your skills because you hadn't really fought up until, you know, in the Western Hockey League. So what did you do to become better and more lethal in that role?
In the role of the fighter, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, practice. Like, people talk about, you know, doing this and doing that. And I'm like, listen, I'm going to keep doing this as much as I can and to get real good at it. And I got to tell you, if I would have got knocked out in my first fight or my second fight or my third, my career would have went way different. Like, I was doing the knocking out. So I had confidence that, oh, this isn't that hard. And I never really got tested in my fights until I got to the NHL, where, you know, I remember one night I fought Denny Vial in Tampa, and I got spanked pretty good. And then I fought Brashear, and then I got really beat. And you now your confidence is low. And, you know, you're fighting the toughest guys in the world. So that's sort of how that went.
Mize, I want to take you back to your last year in junior. That was my first year in junior. You just got traded to Spokane, and we were in Kamloops, and we had Chris Murray, and you know, you guys had it was a pretty big rivalry between Kamloops and Spokane. And I'll never forget this. So it was a pretty big game, and, you know, it was a pretty intense game, and I think maybe you and Murr had fought earlier in the game, but now the game gets kind of out of hand, and, you know, everyone puts their fighters out on one side, so we all put our fighters out. So it was myself and my crew chief on the D, and then Chris Murray was right wing on the other side, and you were on, you know, you were lined up against me as the right winger. And Mike Khrushchev comes over to me, he's like, Struddy, Brant Myers is a killer. If he comes at one of us, the other guy jumps in. I'm like, promise. I'm like, I'll do that for sure. So the puck is won back to me, and I look over. You're coming at me like you're about to just tear me apart. I look over at Khrushchev. He's like, no, I'm good. I'm like, what? And so I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to get killed. But Chris Murray had, you know, obviously he knew more than me, comes over. And you guys had one of the most incredible fights I've ever seen. It was too tough. Do you remember this? It was an amazing fight there in Spokane.
Yeah, I do. And he wanted me pretty bad because prior to that, we played an exhibition game, Portland, when I was 16, I think, or no, I was 17. And Murr was playing for Kamloops. And I fought him in preseason, and he ended up breaking his arm. Okay. And he had a cast on it. I remember him saying to me, you know, next time that this cast is off, we're going to go again. And so I knew as soon as we played Kamloops that it was going to be pretty much on.
So tell me about your first NHL goal with the Bolts in 94-95.
Yeah, it was actually an interesting situation. It was my second game, and I was just sick before the game because they had a guy named Dave Brown on the other end. And I was just like, Dad, do I really got to fight this guy tonight? And he's like, absolutely. So I get to the rink, skating around. We got warm-ups. I see Brownie skating on the other end, and I'm just like, I'm going to get murdered. And funny thing is, we go in after the warm-ups, and the coach comes in, and they take the eraser, and they scratch Brown off the fourth line. And I'm like, oh, my God. I'm like, what a gift. So I go out there, and now I'm just playing the game, right? Like, back to just playing the game. They have no tough guys on the team. And the puck gets rimmed around the boards, and I just grab the puck and do, like, a normal cycle. And I just thought, go to the net. And Ron Hextall was the goalie. And the cycle came back, puck came out to me in the slot, and I just batted it in. And that was it.
What was your celly like?
I don't remember, dude. I just remember getting back to the bench, and our assistant coach, a guy named Danny Gare.
Oh,
Danny Gare. Yeah, he said, Mizey said, you know what, you can play in this league. And I'll never forget him saying that, and sort of just gives you a bit of confidence, you know.
Isn't it nice to hear that? You know,
yeah.
It's funny because you think you can, maybe you can't, but to hear those words out of someone who should know. I remember someone told me that too. I was like, I almost fell off my chair. I was so happy.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It didn't happen a lot throughout my career, but, you know, I think when you get to the NHL or you get a chance, it's no different than a guy like Binnington in St. Louis. I know that the comparison isn't close, but my point is he got his shot. And he had to shut out his first game, right? Well, it was no different than my first game when I fought a guy named Mark Jansons and I knocked him out. So, and I score a goal in my second game. So if that reversed, who knows how my career would have went.
Yeah, it's funny how it comes together because, you know, you look back and sometimes through the lens of, you know, now we're different people. We're not different. We've matured a bit or whatever. We can just sit calmly. But when you're right in it, you're like, I got to do this. And maybe a choice here or there, at least for on the ice, might have affected a career differently than maybe it worked out.
Yeah. Well, again, if Dave Brown plays that night, who knows what happens in that fight?
Yeah.
So it was just the hockey gods were on my side. And, you know, in those 15 games, I made enough of a name for myself for me to at least be on the radar.
Brent Myers joins us. And, you know, it's interesting. And players, you got to make a name for yourself in whatever fashion it is, right? There's no exact way you know if it's going to work or not, Brent. But you did have that skill underneath. Obviously, it's not necessarily something you lose, but you talked about you didn't necessarily work on it as much because you were old. Did you ever have a coach at times they'll pull you aside and say, "Hey, Brent, let's work on more of these skills rather than just good. Hey, you're good at the fisticuff stuff now."
Yeah, no, they did. I mean, don't get me wrong. I had the assistant coaches. I'd stay out after practice and do all the normal stuff that, you know, the guys did. But when it came right down to it, you know, my main objective was making sure that I put, you know, Vaseline on my face in the right area.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't how good I was taping my stick. Like, every night seemed to be somebody that was ready to, you know, kick the crap out of you. And that's just the way the game was back then. And, you know, so that's sort of how it went.
You know, personally, I'd have some anxiety, especially when I was younger, knowing that this was probably coming, you know, not just the day of the game, but maybe the night before. And not always, but it just seemed if I knew that I had a problem with the guy. Did you have anxiety like that, you know, just thinking about what might happen?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was a big reason for my substance abuse issues that I had. Mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing worse than knowing that I had to scrap in 48 hours. Like, it's one thing to get on the ice and somebody takes a run at you or run at your players. That's instinct. You just drop the gloves and go. That's easy. But when you're premeditating how the fight's going to go down, to me, that was really mentally draining and exhausting.
And that's the hard part because it becomes you know what's coming, so you have to deal with it, you know, with the substances, and then you know it's coming again. Like it's not like it's a one time thing, right? It just repeats itself, and I guess that's when you start getting into some really dark times.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just how can I stop? How can I turn my head off right now? Because I know it's coming. Like we're playing Boston or we're playing Montreal or whoever it is. And how can I turn my head off? Well, if I go down to a pub or a bar and I sit down and start having, you know, 5, 6, 7 drinks and a couple cigarettes and laughing and singing, well, I'm not really thinking about the game. And that to me was, it was a crutch, but almost helped me get through it in a weird way.
Did it get to the point, Brent, where, you know, obviously I know you went through the substance abuse program, so it became a problem. When did you know it was becoming, you know, more than a crutch and a real issue for you?
I believe when I got traded to the Oilers and Glenn Sathers told Rich Winter that they wanted to drug test me. And then I remember at that point I started trying to find good urine to mess up the urine tester. So then I sort of knew, but when I got traded to the Flyers a couple months later, and I was actually going to practice high on cocaine, obviously at that point I was a 23-year-old guy playing in the NHL, and I, you know, I'm doing one line of coke at 8:30 and then driving to the rink. I mean, it was just something that I couldn't get under control.
So where does the first trip to rehab or you know, kind of the help start coming in for you, Mizey?
Yeah, so at the end of the year, Bobby Clark told me, he said, if we catch you drinking again, we've told you a numerous amount of times that we're just going to release you. And so at the end of the year, they did. They caught me drinking again. They released me, and that day I called the NHL for help. I never knew what Alcoholics Anonymous was or what an alcoholic was or a drug. I didn't know any of that. And they had a guy fly in the next day and pack up my apartment, and we flew to Los Angeles, and that was my first sort of stint at treatment.
So that was in 1998, Brent?
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's in the summer. How because, you know, of course, then you went to the San Jose Sharks the next season. How was that off season for you, just, you know, going to rehab for the first time?
It was pretty eye-opening. I mean, I didn't think I was an alcoholic. I just thought that I liked to party hard. And, you know, but the one thing that was happening is I was getting into shape finally. They paid for a boxing trainer and for me to go to Gold's Gym 5 days a week. So I went from 235 pounds down to, I went to camp at 216 in San Jose, and I felt amazing. And I was just like, wow, this is what happens when you lay off the booze and the drugs and you actually work out. It was the first time in my career I ever lifted weights.
Are you kidding me? That was the first time in that summer?
Yeah. Yeah.
Holy jeez, that's amazing. You made it and you were that strong without it.
Yeah, I know, right?
That's amazing. So you get there and you're feeling good about yourself. You know, you're in shape and you've had a good summer. You know, how does that year start off there with the Sharks?
Not good. I ended up getting out of treatment, went into training camp, felt great. About 6 weeks later, I relapsed and I got in a bar fight. And Doug Wilson knew the guy that I was beating up. And so they put me back on a plane the next day to the same treatment center for stage two, which was a suspension from the league, but I didn't get paid this time. So I ended up spending another 90 days in treatment for the second time, and then I went back and finished out the year in San Jose.
And did the second time work better than the first?
A little, yeah. They wanted me to live with a guy named Dave Maley, who was an ex. Yeah. So I stayed with Dave. He was sober. And, you know, the thing was, I could always do 3-4 months, you know, but the itch would always come back. And the anxiety of the role that I had, and I wasn't happy in the role. And, you know, now I'm hiding and I'm lying. And the next thing you know, I got caught again for another dirty cocaine test. And I went back to treatment again for the third time. And that time was 6 months suspended without pay. And I had to write a letter to Bettman to get reinstated. And so I went back to treatment for another 6 months.
And Brad, it's interesting kind of how life comes full circle, because, you know, eventually you did get sober. How many times did you have to go to rehab before you were able to win? I don't even know if win's the right word here.
Sure. So I went through, I got suspended again for the fourth time from the NHL for another dirty cocaine test. And that time was a year suspension. And then I had to get reinstated by Gary again. I made it back from that, believe it or not. And then once I fought LaRock and I got my face smashed in, I pretty much hung up the skates, got dark for a year and a half. And then I went to my fifth and final rehab in 2008. And I've been sober ever since.
That's fantastic, man. I know, you know, a few people in my family have tried it, and some really strong people. It can take you a long time. So kudos to that. Mm-hmm. And I know then, you know, it's kind of funny how, you know, what was one of your biggest nemesis at times allowed you to get back into the NHL many years later, because you know, the Kings hired you. I don't know what the proper – you were kind of like a consultant for the players, because they had a few guys who, you know, who used to run like Brant Myers, but they never ran as fast as Brant Myers ran.
Yeah, it was sort of the calm before the storm. I mean, it was, you know, they had their issues. Three guys got arrested. They hired me, brought me in. Basically, it was almost like a lifestyle coach, really. And so my role there for 3 years was great. I loved it, and I loved getting to know the organization and being able to lend a hand when I could. And then when Dean and Daryl got let go, Rob Blake took over, and the vision sort of changed in Los Angeles, and that's fine. I mean, that kind of stuff happens all the time in hockey. But I was just grateful for the 3 years that I did get to spend there.
You know, looking back now, Mizey, I know you were right in it, but you know, as a player, could you recognize now, guys? Because some guys I played with have come out and said they had these issues, and it's quite obvious now looking back at the way they kind of, maybe hung or didn't hang out with the guys, or always had something going on away from the team, or you know, were really quiet in the mornings. Like, could you now look back and think, oh man, like player XYZ were obviously suffering through something like I was.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, when you look at even the team we had in L.A., you know, believe me, Anze Kopitar and Jeff Carter weren't the problems, you know. Yeah. You know, Trevor Lewis wasn't a problem. There's certain guys, you know, on the team that are going to be fine. And when I would do the meetings in training camp one-on-one with each guy, there was probably 19, 20 guys that were good, but yeah, there's three or four that like to really get at it, you know, and that's not that hard to notice.
Brent Myers joins us. Was it difficult for players to trust you because they felt like maybe you were going to talk to management?
Well, that was an issue, and that came up. But ultimately, the way that I structured it, and the one-on-one meetings I had with each guy, I tiered it in three tiers, and you know, I let them know that, listen, you know, at no point in stage one or two am I able to share anything that happens. But if there's an issue and you're not complying with what I've laid out in steps one and steps two, then I have to bring in management in step three. But that's the last final straw. So they knew that there was lots of rope that they had to work with me that was strictly confidential. And it took probably the first season, actually, to really gain the trust of the guys. But in year two and three, it was completely different than year one.
You know, Mize, do you think that the NHL needs to, or what could the NHL do to help guys that are suffering in by themselves?
Well, it's quite honestly, it's something like we brought up in Los Angeles, and you know, guys don't want to call the cops on themselves. So what they have now in the NHL and the NHLPA is a reaction program. So if something goes wrong or a red light happens, well, they've got something to handle it then when it's too late. But what do they have for a proaction program like we had in LA, where I was basically a third party and it was strictly confidential, where they could call me at 2 a.m. and go, man, I'm really struggling. And they knew that I wouldn't run to Dean or Daryl. And so what, are you going to pick up the phone and call the league or call the PA when, you know, number one, maybe it's not an ex-player. Maybe it's somebody that's never played the game, that can't relate, that doesn't have a drug or alcohol right. problem. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. But I believe you can always work on improving something. And I don't know if you were to give all 31 general managers a marker and walk up to the board and say, guys, can you write down one negative thing that this program presents to the organization? I don't think they could do it.
Brent Myers joining us. And Brent, I get the sense, like, I remember Theo Fleury, and you know, he since, you know, recanted a little bit, but he was very adamant at the first time the alcohol, the rehab system in the NHL was a joke in how they, you know, they didn't, you know, they you went through it and it was kind of, yeah, great, and then there wasn't much support. A lot of people took that as, oh, him not wanting to look within, and I don't think that's necessarily true. What was your experience? Now that you're this many years sober and you look at that program at the time, how was it as helpful as it could have been? What should have been better?
Well, even when I was in LA, it really hasn't changed. So every training camp, somebody shows up for 45 minutes and they give a speech and they show you a video and they leave and you don't see them again the rest of the year. So I don't know what type of support that is. You know, my role, I was with the team every day. Everywhere we went, on the road, didn't matter. you start building trust and camaraderie with these guys. That's the basis of the foundation. But what you have currently is an information session for 45 minutes to an hour, and then they're gone.
Yeah. So what you're suggesting is there needs to be more than just, you know, one guy visiting all 31 teams. You need to have someone, if not with every team, at least within every division.
I would think. I think that, because then the other part, Strutty, is trying to find a guy. So you have to have qualifications in order to do that job, right? Yeah. And so there's not a lot of guys out there. Like, I could think of probably right now to do that job, five.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think it will improve? Did you have conversations with Bettman or anyone else? Is there an open line from NHL organizations or people above to say, hey, this is something we need? Because, you know what, you mentioned cocaine, Brandt, a lot. I know maybe, you know, we hear players, they don't go to the bar as much, but I'm not naive to think that you've got young males with lots of money and cocaine could be an issue.
Yeah, whether it's coke, whether it's ecstasy, whether it's sleeping pills, you know, oxy, whatever it is, you know, the accessibility that these kids or men have today is it's pretty high. And as far as Bettman goes and the league, you know, I've reached out. I've reached out to let them know about the program with the PA and the league. You know, that was 2 years ago. So, you know, I can't really speak on where their head's at with all this.
Well, Mizey, I really appreciate you sharing everything today, but I know you've got you're working on a book all about your story. And what was your reason behind putting together this? I think it's coming out in the new year.
Yeah. So, the book, I started basically writing about 5 years ago, 6 years ago. And it was just the journey through everything that I've been through the five suspensions from the National Hockey League, and then I got a lifetime ban where I couldn't play anymore, and then rebuilding my life after hockey was over to the extent where my life today is better than any year that I ever played in the NHL. So this was more about a book of hope and courage and really never giving up on somebody that may have an addiction problem, because it took me five times to really get it, but thank God nobody gave up on me on the fifth time.
Absolutely, man. I'll tell you what, I really appreciate it. I love that you came on and shared, and I can't wait for the book. When is it coming on, the new year? Are you expecting it?
Yeah, January of 21, yeah. So we're finished writing, and now it's just a matter of editing, and then obviously with the corona issue here, it got pushed back about 3 months, so we're looking at January.
Well, Brandt, once it comes out, we'll have you, and hopefully then we'll be back in studio, so we'll have you then, man.
Awesome, guys. I appreciate it.